This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, I'm Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, action, exploitation, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1970s to today. Be sure and check out reallyawfulmovies.com for reviews, interviews, lists, and terrific movie giveaways.
Right from our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 70, Airport 79, The Concorde, a.k.a. The Concorde, Airport 79, a.k.a. a year later in Europe. Airport 1980.
Right, and this is the fourth and final Airport movie, famously lampooned an airplane, which we both love, but we haven't seen any of the Airport movies, have we?
No.
And so this is our first exposure to the Airport series. Now, I mean, the first Airport, I do know that, I mean, this was, you know, sort of like among the tradition of, like, the Irwin Allen type disaster films, you know, Poseidon Adventure, Towering Inferno, where you cram as much, you know, A-list, B-list, C-list actors as you possibly can, throw them into some sort of disaster and see who survives to see the credits roll, right?
Yeah.
Now, over the years, I mean, there's been some incredible pedigree in these movies. I mean, you've had actors like Burt Lancaster, Jack Lemmon, Chuck Heston,
Olivia de Havilland, Christopher Lee, Karen
Myrtle
Black,
Roy, Karen Black from House of a Thousand Corpses and Five Easy Pieces. Each one of these movies had at least half a dozen, you know, A-list actors.
Yeah, or Dean Martin.
And then when it comes to this, like a big pizza pie.
Yeah, it goes off the skids here.
It's the airport.
Yeah.
Now, in this movie, we have, I mean, obviously at this point, maybe they're having a little bit more trouble finding
an audience. Maybe they had to go to television, which they did to. With a few sort of sitcom stars, but also to get some global stars, like the pilot Paul, who was played by
Alain Delon, who is, I mean, a wonderful actor in his native France. He was in some great French and Wave films like Le Samurai, Le Cirque Rouge. Wonderful actor when he speaks in his native language.
Yeah.
But in this movie, completely incomprehensible. Yeah. We have the great Robert Wagner, you know, the man who is...
the chin himself from Austin Powers.
We have Sylvia Christel, Emmanuel, the softcore Emmanuel.
Yes.
We have Eddie Albert from Green fucking Acres. We go from, you know, Burt
really
Lancaster
corny.
To Green Acres.
Yeah.
We got, I mean, again, talking about pedigree and slumming, we got Bibi Andersson. Bibi Andersson was in a
legend, the Swedish film.
Bergman films. I mean,
yeah.
He was in Persona, Wild Strawberries, The Seventh Seal, and on and on. Now, talking about the pedigree of Bibi Andersson, after that we have John Davidson.
Game show host.
Hollywood Squares.
Helmet Head
himself. We have Charo. Coochie coochie coo. She was all about 3 minutes.
Yeah. Inexplicably popular 70s Latina icon who, I don't know how, she was a variety performer and a singer, but for some reason, she just became like a talk show late night staple.
Mm.
It's sort of a modern incarnation would be, I guess, maybe the woman from Modern Family, where she talks in the sort of same way, busty, and she's sort of known for just this, and inexplicably popular.
Mm.
Equally so, Jimmy J.J. Walker is also
Dynamite himself is in this movie as a sax player.
Yeah.
We have Martha Ray, who we know from Polydent commercials.
You know, just probably doing her a disservice that she's probably a star of stage and screen for like several decades, but we know her from these schlocky commercials. Hey, we're betraying our age here.
Well, hey, you know what? I mean, she didn't quit herself much bearing this one. She did one with irritable bowel syndrome who couldn't get out of the toilet.
It's this horrible running gag of just, you know, is the, you know, don't go in the bathroom or the bathroom's occupied. Just her dealings with the bathroom was just a running set piece for this thing's 2 hours.
We had, this actress does have some pedigree, Cicely Tyson.
Yes.
She played the mother of a son who was in a hospital in Paris who was in need of a heart transplant, and she was conscripted to actually carry the heart with her in the stowaway compartment, or, the overhead compartment.
You'd think they would have gone a nurse or some medical personnel to do this, but she didn't.
Yeah, she had a box actually marked human transplant heart, and she had to take that to Paris. We also have the great David Warner, who I really enjoyed in The Omen. Mm-hmm. Time After Time, Mercedes McCambridge, but I mean
Ed Begley Jr., just everyone.
He was in the credits. I didn't see him.
We weren't paying too much attention at that point. Now, and the voice of Harry Shearer, a very Reverend Lovejoy kind of voice.
That was unmistakable. Yeah.
Spinal Tap. Yes, well, of course.
Yeah.
And long storied radio career and obviously comedy performer now.
About 30 voices. He's Mr. Burns.
Yeah, everybody.
Smithers, Skinner, it's everybody. Now, normally when we do these podcasts, I take notes. I took scanned notes. I sit there, I take notes, I write down the plot, I try and make heads and tails of what's going on, write down a few choice lines. With this podcast, I am not looking at my notes whatsoever because this movie was just completely incomprehensibly bizarre. It made no sense. And if I look at my notes right now, I'm going to be like, it's going to make no sense if I just go stream of consciousness on this one. So I'm going stream of consciousness.
Yeah, agreed. This is, I guess, this trip across the Atlantic involving this supersonic jet, which had its heyday in the 70s to, I guess, end of the 90s. Mm. It was flown by British Airways and Air France, most notably. So this thing, apparently,
you're talking about the Concorde.
The Concorde jet, yeah.
Not the movie, but the Concorde.
No, no. Yeah. Apparently, Keith Richards flew in it, mm-hmm. flew on it. There's a famous essay written by David Rakoff, Canadian writer, about what it's like to travel on it. So a few Richie Riches got a chance to fly on this extravagant thing, which could make the trip from Paris to New York or Washington in like 3 hours. Mm-hmm. And that 3 hours would have gone by, I think, faster than this fucking thing. Yeah. And there was some subplot. The best we could make of it is that there's this, arms
manufacturer
that's involved in this surreptitious dealings with, Uganda, with the dictator there, Idi Amin, and Syria, and all these different places.
I didn't hear that. I must have brought it off, dude, because honestly, I did not hear any of that, but that's okay.
And the guy who runs this company is romantically involved, as it would happen, with an investigative journalist who is, I guess, experiencing...
Covering the Olympics.
Yes.
Okay.
And she's experiencing cognitive dissonance because she wants to report on the fact that this guy is involved in this nefarious arms dealing, but it happens to be her boyfriend.
Okay,
so
let's just rewind a second. Okay? So this guy, this is Robert Wagner himself, okay?
Yes.
And he plays somebody by the name of
Kevin Harrison, head of Harrison Aerospace or whatever.
Right. It's funny because at the beginning of the movie, you get like this news broadcast, which is pure exposition. Three or four stories in a row, which all
relate to,
and they're going to say, Kevin Harrison is one man of the year, and the Buzzard project is 100% successful.
Yeah.
These missiles that have a 100% success rate in terms of hitting their target.
Yes.
And the 1980 Olympics are in Moscow, and there's going to be this goodwill tour, and all of this is going to converge in this fucking airplane. But anyway, so we're in Washington, D.C. Okay, but even before that, there's an assassination, and I turned to you and I said, why are they killing this guy? Because, it was so like...
Because he was... the scant notes I took. He was about to tip off...
Her name was Maggie.
Maggie, okay. Wake up, Maggie. I think I got something to say to you.
Maggie.
And he's trying to tip her off about this guy and this company's shady dealings with these dictators, again, overseas. But he gets taken out.
So then we have Maggie with her boyfriend, Harrison. This is Robert Wagner. And they're in the Mall of America in Washington, D.C. And she's saying, he was involved in some nefarious dealings. So, do you know anything about this?
I've never killed anyone. I'm totally on the up and up. I may run an international aviation firm, but I'm not involved in this surreptitious shit.
I may be creating weapons of mass destruction, but
our relationship's sacrosanct.
I have everything that I need in this world.
Yes.
Why would I need to sell legal arms? Mm-hmm. Have a great trip on the Concorde, en route to Paris, France, and then to a layover to Moscow. Anyway.
Yes.
Unbeknownst to poor Maggie, this man now wants... Well, because she found a document.
Yes,
it's always a document. We learn
this is the most poorly concealed document ever, because on the front in large 18-point font it says inventory of weapon sales, and it says in red stamping confidential.
That's what the attorney was. Like, okay, well, I was going to look at this incriminating document, but oh my god, it's been red stamped confidential.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Burn it!
Put it aside,
So, she knows it all. She
knows it all. And so, to thwart the disclosure of all this incredibly damning information.
Yeah. Now, talk about an exaggerated reaction.
Yeah, instead of just killing her, we have to kill everyone on this plane that she happens to be on.
Mm-hmm. Now, did I mention George Kennedy is in this movie?
Yes.
The great George Kennedy from Cool Hand Luke. He's the only actor to appear in all four airport movies.
Mm-hmm.
So he is the pilot of this plane. And, yeah.
I guess his agent had a failure to communicate with him about how crappy this was. Yeah. But good on him. Continuity.
Huh? Continuity. We need some sort of continuity. I mean,
even if there's none to be had in this plot.
So she's on this plane, and I mean, her fellow passengers, again, are Martha Ray with the IBS, the bowel syndrome, who cannot get out of the toilet. Jazz musician Jimmy Walker, who will not
stop playing his sax in, at 50,000 feet.
Yeah, and goes in the toilet and hotboxes it for poor Martha Ray to go in there. Again, Eddie Albert, Greenacres, Greenacres is a place to be. Poor Cicely Tyson, my son is dying, I have his heart. And meanwhile, this guy, the Ferris Robert Wagner, shoots this fucking buzzard missile at the Concorde.
To take it out, in order to kill
this one person.
Yes.
Overreaction.
Yeah.
And then, luckily we have George Kennedy at the helm.
Yes, luckily.
His co-pilots are David Warner and Alain Delon, again, incomprehensible, and the stewardess is Sylvia Christel, your sexy stewardess, Emmanuel herself, and he's doing this evasive action.
You know, at one point it's a heat-seeking missile, but apparently you can avoid it.
Well, he's doing this barrel roll.
With 100%, he's doing these flips, but it has 100% success rate.
Right.
This Harrison-engineered rocket, but it doesn't matter.
Yep.
Their flying skills, these flyboys are on top of things, and they manage to avoid the rocket. Mm-hmm. Now, unfortunately for the passengers, they have to flip upside down and, take these incredibly stomach-churning, evasive maneuvers.
Yeah. And, I mean, we have to say, this plane has got the worst flight crew management. When the oxygen masks come down, the steward, there's one male steward, he's running to the back, for
taking evasive action of his own.
Yeah, he's not, helping everybody affix, the gas mask, it's ludicrous. So, in American airspace, it was a malfunction. We destroyed this missile. As soon as they get into French airspace, the fucking French Air Force is now trying to shoot them down.
Yeah, or were they? They were unmarked jets. So, again, these mystery jets are trying to shoot down this aircraft. And they have limited success doing so as well, because
you can open the window
in mid-flight and shoot a flare gun, which will attract the heat-seeking missile.
Two of them.
Yeah.
Oh, but don't forget, one of the flares actually went off in the cockpit.
Yes.
That was
starting kind of a small fire.
Starting a small fire, exactly. We should mention that another passenger on the plane was one of these Moscow-bound Olympic athletes.
Yes.
Weightlifter with his deaf-mute daughter.
Yes.
This guy looked like the love child of Captain Lou Bannon and Burton Cummings.
Yes.
Did we say John Davidson? We did say
John Davidson. Yes, we did. Yeah, and he's romantically involved with a gymnast from the Russian Olympic team, and she ludicrously says to him, why don't you defect and become a Russian?
Risky. Yeah.
I don't want to be, I want to be with you, but I don't want to defect. And it's a ludicrous subplot where they end up in a hot tub together, and he's an investigative, or like a, not investigative reporter, one of these TMZ type reporters.
Yeah, exactly,
tracking the Russian gymnast team.
He's on the Russian gymnast beat.
Yeah. just unbelievable. So this is the motley crew of people in the air.
So, I mean, after this harrowing, near-death experience on the Concorde, they finally land safely in Gay Paris.
Yeah.
And we got to mention the nets. What the fuck is up with these nets?
Mm-hmm.
They're on the runway, like, you know, going.
Well, I guess, yeah, this evasive action they took, and turning upside down and flipping to and fro, it caused damage to the engineering and to the equipment. So they had some issues with the. I want to say the back thrust. Yeah. So they had some issue landing. So at the Charles de Gaulle Airport, that's what it is, right? In Paris, you've been there. I don't know.
Yep.
They set up these ridiculous nets in order to compensate for the fact that they don't have any back thrust, and the brakes could be compromised.
Look, like, if you ever buy a bag of nectarines, you know, they come in those orange bags.
Yeah.
That's what these nuts were.
And the pilot himself, I guess, concedes that. Oh, he tells a story about how he had to land in Vietnam, and these nets were basically like papier-mâché, or I forget what analogy he uses, and said they're basically useless. But luckily for the passengers.
And this movie's fucking useless, but anyway.
Yeah. Well, luckily, I think three or four nets managed to, trap this jet as it lands. Mm-hmm. And just before, I guess it's 200 meters before it's going to get to the end of the runway, it manages to trap it, and all the passengers are safe.
Yes.
Luckily, they arrive in Gay Perry. So
Gay Perry. And at this point, you know, we say goodbye to Miss Tyson because she's able to transport her box of human heart to her son. We don't see any, you know, resolution of that, but we assume her son is okay. Mm-hmm. So good on her. But now, at this point, there's a layover for a night. I mean, you would assume that at this point, you know, after going through such a harrowing experience, you would never want to get on a plane
another
again.
Yeah, another
let alone the same fucking plane. But...
yeah, a few safety checks. This plane is good to go again.
We're now off to Moscow. We're on to Moscow. We got everybody on the plane yet again, except for Cecily Tyson.
Yeah, and it doesn't really explain, like, why are they so enamored with supersonic travel that they just decide to go to Moscow? Like, what's this jazz musician going to Moscow for?
I guess it has to do with this Goodwill tour at the Olympics or something. I don't know.
I mean, I wasn't following.
I mean, there's that one line where he was talking to his agent or his singing girlfriend who was like maybe 50 and says, like, you're gonna make all the Russians drunk or something.
Yeah, I don't know. It was
very bizarre, very very strange, and
very surreal.
And
getting back to some of these lines, the pilots are, you know, having a little tete-a-tete, and they're talking about their families. And the one guy says to the other that his, you know, he's got two kids, and when they used to climb into bed with him and his wife when they couldn't sleep, it was like a disco on a Saturday. And it's like, this is not at all like that. You know, this is very strange lines.
Another line that was wonderful is when we were talking about John Davidson in the hot tub, and he's under the water, and he's being hidden from the Russian
gymnast coach.
And
yeah,
he goes, "Why are you reacting? Oh, the bug wolves, they tickle me in strange places."
Strange places, yeah.
Which I thought was kind of funny. And it's always funny how in these movies, whenever they hide someone underwater,
in a hot tub or on a sitcom, they can hold their breath for minutes at a time.
Yeah, whether it's 12 seconds, 2 minutes, or 2 hours.
Ordinarily, someone would be affected by anoxia, but in order to steer clear of like the probing landlord or the meddling ant, they can stay underwater forever.
It's like a Val Kill. So as soon as that person leaves, they pop off. No one's there.
No one
knows. But anyway, so now we're en route to Moscow. Now again, see, there's all these machinations afoot. Okay, so they're supposed to. And sure, the plane was air ready, but because of the nefarious Robert Wagner. Now, let me say one thing.
Yeah, he's still trying to destroy this jet.
But I don't understand why, because all he wants to do is kill this one reporter. She's on land in Paris.
Yeah, just kill her.
Just kill her. Hire somebody. But no, get her back on the Concorde.
Yeah.
So he made sure that the Concorde was in no way, shape, or form air ready.
Ready, yeah.
And within 10 minutes, this fucking plane is splitting apart at the seams.
Yeah, I guess literally, because the seams, in this case, being the carpet.
Yeah.
And the jazz musician steps over and says, you know, I'm not going to do a J.J. Walker, but I could have sworn that the ground was moving beneath my feet, or I forget what he said.
Dynamite!
Dynamite. That was not a dynamite impression. Mm. And
Charo, that was the other thing. Charo, I mean... She boards a plane in Paris to get to Moscow.
Yes.
They have a little coo-coo-coo routine.
Yes.
But she's like smuggling a chihuahua, and she's like, you know, booted off a plane. Because, you know, pre-9/11, you know.
Yeah, no chihuahuas on a plane. And exactly. She tries to pass off this little Mexican pooch as her seeing eye dog, and the stewardess informs her that most of them are German shepherds. Mm-hmm. And so, the jig is up, and she's booted right off.
Yep. So now we're en route to Moscow, and it's the same thing all over again.
another crash landing. Because this plane
more
is falling
rolls,
apart.
More invasive
yeah,
action
and they got to, for some reason, crash in the Swiss Alps, which strikes me as, given what happened in the Swiss Alps, I guess not too far removed from now, where there's an infamous crash. I figured most crash landings would take place in water, or at least you have a fighting chance of surviving. I've never heard of anyone crash landing into the Alps, and how this would be a good idea, but somehow these amazing pilots managed to glide this thing into like thick snow, and with everyone just surviving perfectly.
Well, there's some great scenes where, like, you know, the snow just crashes right through the fuselage and everything, and Kennedy is
alive. This is not. Yeah.
Now I gotta say one thing. I again, not having seen Airport 75, Airport 77, but knowing that Kennedy was the one connective thread of all these movies, and that Kennedy played the pilot Petroni.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming in each one of these movies there was some sort of calamity
that he solved. It would be like Murder She Wrote or something like. Never fly with this guy.
Who was that hero? Remember in the New York Harbor there was that pilot that.
Yes, the United Airlines pilot or whatever over the. I guess it was
the Hudson River.
The Hudson River, yeah. And he landed everyone and safely, and they were able to get off on the wing and everything. Yeah.
Do you call his name?
No, but rightly lauded as a hero. It was amazing.
As a superstitious fellow, I would think to myself, you know what? If he's flying the plane, he's a hero. Good on him. I don't want to be on his plane. If George Kennedy is on a plane piloting it that times there's some sort of calamity requiring a crash landing, I don't need my pilot to be an expert at crash landings.
Yeah.
I want my pilot to be an expert at safe landings.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So, this is completely ludicrous.
Yeah.
Dull is all hell.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
The antithesis of entertaining. really.
And not exactly star-studded.
Oh. Definitely not. Not star-studded at all. But, hey, you know what? This was the late 70s. We had, basically half of the Hollywood squares.
Yeah.
John Davison, Charo, and Jimmy Walker. So,
yeah.
I mean, I was waiting for, Gary Coleman and Tiny Tim and Rip Taylor to come out. Do a rendition of Tiptoe Through the Tulips. But, this Airport 79, I wish I could do more justice to this movie with more of a cogent plot description, but honestly, like, this was torture.
Yeah.
This was torture to get
through. And we gotta say, some really, really piss-poor effects. Like, they went through the trouble of getting clearance to show a bunch of military aircraft, like Harriers or F-18s, whatever, on the ground. So clearly it was no problem getting shots of military aircraft. But once they went to the skies, they have the fakest, what did you say? Was it chroma key?
Optical chroma key.
Optical chroma key, like phony baloney, ridiculous, couldn't pull the wool over the eyes of a 7-year-old, like awful effects. And this makes you wonder, like, I could understand using that when there's a missile being shot at them from the ground, a surface-to-air missile, sure. You can't replicate a missile being shot at a plane, but for God's sake, like, aircraft attacking another aircraft, just use stock footage. Like, they went all out. There's scenes in Paris, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
They went to Washington, the Mall of America.
Mall of America, yeah. I don't think they went to the Swiss Alps. I think that was
some backlot.
Yeah.
But this was a significantly budgeted affair.
Mm-hmm. So I mean, there's no wonder that there was no Airport 81.
Yeah, or 86 or 85 or whatever. Yeah.
But So I mean, star rating. We're pretty forgiving most of the time. but I'm gonna have to give this one a single star.
Whoa! Interesting.
One star.
Yeah. Well, I was curious and happy to be introduced into this, because I'm familiar with, again, Towering Inferno and, the Poseidon Adventure with Gene Hackman and Shelley Winters.
They're both
really well-crafted, interesting, fun movies, and they happen to have A-list celebrities in them, but that wasn't
This is the equivalent of being introduced to the, you know, the Batman series through
Batman and Robin. Yeah. Well, yeah, okay, so I'm going to say it runs into a little turbulence here. I'm going to give it a very reluctant, I'm going to fasten my seatbelt and give this a very reluctant 2.
Okay.
Just because it's corny, it's fun, it's boring. I would have trimmed a good 30 to 40 minutes out of it, but you can watch it and fast forward through a lot of it.
The fact they landed in Paris and then just basically almost hit rewind and played the whole movie all over again. Yes. Moscow. I mean, you know, this is a movie that's so nice they did it twice.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? But I mean,
and so what did we learn then?
Oh my God, I learned that. And you know, this is beyond just airport, but I mean, Hollywood. Know when to say when.
Yes.
You know what I mean, know when is enough is enough. Yeah. I mean, come on, this is not a movie that needed to be made. Mm-hmm. You know, I learned that you can cram as many D-list actors into a plane as possible.
Yes.
And you're gonna get boring shit. I don't know. What did you learn?
Well, I guess. Well, there's a lot of fun little vignettes here. I was under the impression. Given, you know, this suave French star, he's a pilot, and generally pilots, you know, fly boys, they have their own bars, like airport bars, like women are really attracted to pilots, and rightly so. These guys are high flyers, and they're suave guys with a lot of power, and they're quite heroic in many ways, but not George Kennedy. Is in this one little scene, I guess his French buddy hooks him up with a lady of the evening, which is played by B.B. Anderson. It's like, what? That's talking about slumming.
This is Ingmar Bergman's muse, and he's playing a French courtesan.
Yeah, a courtesan with a horrible French accent, it should be said. So, I guess pilots can't be left to their own devices to meet ladies. You'd think that would be enough, just wearing your stripes. But no, he gets a lady of the evening procured for him in Paris for his flight, for his landing.
He was smart enough to deduce that it was late in the evening, but he was ecstatic just the same. So.
Yeah, good for him. Yeah.
So yeah,
and I think you'll be ecstatic, or maybe not so much, enjoying our website, which is updated every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. www.reallyawfulmovies.com. Reviews, giveaways, and interviews.
And
check it out.
The Crypt TV Network.
Yeah, and check out our podcast every Saturday. And we'll talk to you soon.
Take care.